Mr. Ketterman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Travis Ketterman. I represent Elevator Constructors Local 2. There are five reasons that the lower court's decision should not stand. First of all, there's a lack of sufficient evidentiary basis for the judgment, and therefore
that's
the rule...
That's such a weak argument. It's really pathetic.
It is, Your Honor, a very difficult argument to make, but in this case...
It's hopeless.
And I'll move on to the second basis, which would be that there's no reasonable basis or rational connection between the damage award and the judgment. This decision, this lawsuit, involves a September 2003 decision by the executive...
So you're concerned about the jury form, interpreting the jury form? Is that what's bothering you?
That would be part of the double recovery basis. This argument is the...
Well, this is your mitigation, failure to mitigate...
In part, but there's also no reasonable basis. When the executive board was making its decision, it was making a $147 decision whether Mr. Berger was entitled to reduce dues.
That's a mitigation argument.
It is, in part, but it's also a judicial review of whether there's a rational basis.
What's the difference? You're saying he should have, you know, coughed up the extra money.
He should have coughed up the extra money, in which case there would be no damages.
But the jury said he said he didn't have the money. The jury agreed with him. That's the end of that.
Well, it's still proper for this court to review that under...
He testified he couldn't afford it. The jury believed him. That's the end of it.
But he testified, if you look at his testimony as to the financial basis, by September of 2003, Mr. Berger had been fired from his job for his own conduct. Mr. Berger had made the decision not to put his name on the out-of-work list. Mr. Berger had made the decision to remain a helper.
He didn't put his name on that workbook because he didn't want to go to the, you know, back of the queue. That was reasonable. And there's evidence that you're not required to sign the workbook. Your case on the merits is really bad, I think.
But there's evidence that in the past...
It's zero, really. You don't understand. You're re-arguing a jury verdict.
I understand, but the reason we take this on appeal is because there was no credibility decision. The facts were uncontested.
This out-of-work book, the policy was never reduced to writing, right? And there's no evidence that was presented that any other union member was denied reduced fee cards because they failed to fill out the out-of-work book. I mean, that evidence was devastating.
Well, there's a number of points. Unwritten is not the same as unknown. There's uncontroverted evidence that in July of 2003 and September of 2003, Mr. Elmhurst informed Mr. Berger that if you sign the out-of-work list, you qualify. So the fact that it was not written, and that was conceded, is not the same as saying it was unknown.
Well, do you concede that Mr. Berger attempted to pay reduced dues in September of 2003, but Local 2 rejected his check?
He rejected that on the basis that he was not qualified for the reduced dues and he owed $265. There's no evidence he tried to make it for the second quarter. And there's
In the formal meeting when he was discarded from the union, they said he didn't fill out the form properly. There wasn't any form to fill out, was there?
There was a form, and the union conceded the form was filled out properly.
Right.
Mr. Elmhurst testified that his recommendation was based on the failure to sign the out-of-work list, and that was explained. Mr. Berger did not see the minutes.
You don't understand. All this stuff is contested. You say uncontroverted. It's all controverted. I don't understand. I think your argument on the merits is downright frivolous.
But the facts were not contested. For example, the fact
Judge Kaney was just saying, right? They give a reason. They say the form wasn't properly filled out. That's false.
The union conceded that the form was filled out, so that wasn't a factual contest.
But don't you understand what the issue is? The issue is whether by lying about that, they were showing that they had an improper purpose, right? It's a pretext. They gave this pretext. Form wasn't filled out properly. There was no form. When you give a pretext, that allows a jury to infer that there's, you know, monkey business.
The facts also show he received two reduced fee cards.
You are so wasting your time.
If I may briefly address the issue of the double recovery on the jury verdict. In that case, we don't need to look to the jury. Mr. Berger's attorneys...
What's your interpretation of what the jury did, what they had in their minds?
I think they added everything up, and so they believed, based on the instructions, that Mr. Berger would get the $50,000, the $12,000, and the $4,000, as the lower court alludes. I think there's a built-in double recovery to the lost future earnings and the pain and suffering. Regardless of what the jury thought, it was agreed by the parties beforehand with the judge that you do not add A and B, which is exactly what has happened. We have added the $6,000 lost future earnings and the $12,000 lost future earnings to get $18,000.
What's your interpretation? They give him $50,000 on the ADEA and $25,000 on the ADA and $50,000 on the fair duty of fair representation. And what was in their minds when they did that?
I think they misinterpreted. I think they were allocating 25 and 25, and they added 50 on the second charge.
What does that mean?
It means that as the jury, as the judgment stands now, there's a double recovery for the lost.
What was the jury thinking? What's the best interpretation of what they meant?
The best interpretation that they meant was what it says. But I think, regardless of that, the parties had agreed ahead of time that you do not add A and B. And so it was proper for this...
What do you think the jury thought was the damages that Berger sustained?
I think the jury thought the total damages Mr. Berger sustained were those listed on the LMRA count, which is the $50,000, the $12,000, the $4,000.
You're not answering my question. I'm just asking about the compensatory damage, not the future and not the pain and suffering or whatever it is.
I think the back pay was $50,000.
It's $50,000.
Correct. And I think, therefore, the parties had agreed you do not add A and B. And so you do not add 25 and 50, and you do not add 6 and 12 and 2 and 4. And so, therefore, I think the court abused its discretion in the 59E motion. In regards to the liquidated damages portion that the court attributed to that the jury attributed to the ADA claim was $25,000. And I think there is no liquidated damage provision under the Duty of Fair Representation action. And I think, therefore, the LD should be kept.
You said you thought his damages were $50,000, that the jury thought his damages were $50,000.
I think they allocated $25,000 to ADA.
But they thought he had suffered his back pay was $50,000, the lost back pay was $50,000, right? That's what they thought.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he lost that equally because of the ADA. If there were no fair duty of fair representation, he still would have lost his back pay, right?
I can't answer that question. I think the jury...
No, of course you can answer the question. You said his lost back pay was $50,000. Now, if he proved a violation of the ADEA, then... that means he would be entitled to $50,000 of back pay. You could just forget about the duty of fair representation. Well, then you double that, and he gets $100,000.
Yes, Your Honor, but the jury was the one that made the allocations.
You agree that what the jury said was this fellow lost $50,000 in back pay. Now, then they go crazy, and they allocate it, and they're confused. But the fact is, you're willing to agree, they thought the amount of back pay lost was $50,000. Well, he lost that. As if there had been no fair duty issue, he would have lost that anyway because of the ADEA.
I think the jury believed it was $50,000 total between the two claims, one claim.
The back pay he lost is one number. You can allocate. That was the jury's mistake. He would have lost it either way, right?
I agree. It appears they did.
If there were no fair duty claim, he still would have lost the $50,000.
I believe that is what the jury also thought.
Okay, so you just double that.
I see I'm in my rebuttal time. Thank you, Your Honor.
So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ketterman. Mr. Feeney?
May it please the Court, my name is Daniel Feeney. I represent Mr. Robert Berger. This case comes before you on appeal of a judgment entered after a trial and jury verdict in favor of my client. And essentially every issue raised on appeal is controlled by the substantial deference owed the jury verdict. Regarding the union's challenges to the sufficiency of the evidence as to findings of retaliation and mitigation, I'm happy to answer any questions the Court may have, but if there are none.
I just want to go to this, the jury award. If we agree with you that the jury didn't award a double recovery of back pay and we reinstate a total back pay award of $75,000, why shouldn't we calculate the liquidated damages based on the $25,000 back pay amount the jury allocated to the ADA violation?
Your Honor, I think it is similar to what Judge Posner was just stating, that there is a single injury that flows from the denial of Mr. Berger's card, and that injury is the same whether the union was motivated by his NLRB charges and therefore violated the LMRA, or whether it was motivated by his age discrimination charges and therefore violated the ADEA. And the authority, liquidated damages, is put the charge to the district court is to determine what financial back pay harm the plaintiff suffered and then double that. That is the directive for back pay under the ADEA. And in this case, the conclusion the jury reached is that it was $75,000 in back pay that Mr. Berger suffered after he lost his card. It's important to note.
So therefore, you would just like us to reinstate the jury's verdict?
To reinstate the jury's verdict so that the back pay award is $75,000 and to increase the liquidated damage award from $50,000.
I don't think that's the best interpretation of the jury verdict. It looks as if they assigned 25 to each and then put the 50 in the, you know, because there wasn't a place to add them, right? It wouldn't make any sense to say that he had $25,000 lost back pay and $50,000 from the ADA, $50,000 from the fair duty. That didn't make any, that's completely irrational. As you say, it's one injury, right? One injury.
Well, Your Honor,
they must have split it even, right? 25-25.
Well, other courts that have faced similar verdict forms have reached different conclusions. They've concluded it's equally plausible the jury.
There's no, you can, one can figure out they're confused by a really bad verdict form, mm-hmm. really bad. Mm-hmm. They're confused, and the way they would be likely to respond would be to split everything in half between the two violations. And that's what they apparently did, right? Because the second is the first plus an equal amount as the first. That's what gets you the second.
Well,
because
Your Honor,
the thing that's least plausible is that they would think that the back pay was different between the two violations.
Well, with all due respect, I think it's less plausible that if they intended Mr. Berger to take home $50,000 in back pay damages, that they would insert $25,000 in one account and $50,000 in another and assume that the first would be disregarded. I think the logical conclusion is that they would assume the two would be added together.
Completely, we couldn't possibly sustain a verdict in which they say $25,000 for ADEA, $50,000 for duty of fair representation when it's the identical injury. That's completely loony.
Well, the Second Circuit did it and the Ninth Circuit did it.
I don't care what it did. It doesn't make any sense.
There is something in the record that maybe sheds some light on that, that although this might not be a rational way a jurist would assess this, Mr. Berger filed a single EEOC charge and two NLRB charges. They could have decided if their total assessment was $75,000 in damages, that it makes sense to divide it between the two on a two-third, one-third basis.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, our job is not to our job is to try to reconcile in any way possible a jury verdict that might appear inconsistent.
But you can't try to reconcile it by attributing irrationality to it.
Well, Your Honor,
you can attribute lenity, you can attribute this, that, and the other thing, but not sheer irrationality.
Your Honor, I guess I respectfully disagree that it's irrational for a jury to do that.
How could back pay be?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay.
How could back pay be related to the number of charges you file?
I don't think it is. I think the jury concluded...
Irrational.
But if the jury concluded
$75,000... If we know a jury is irrational, we have to reverse.
If the jury's conclusion was not irrational...
Entitled to a rational jury.
And to conclude that Mr. Berger suffered $75,000 of damage is rational. There was evidence that he suffered over almost $100,000 in back pay damages. At trial, he sought back pay damages in the amount of $94,500, submitted uncontroverted evidence that his salary after he lost his card was nearly $50,000 less than he earned when he was a union member, that he spent 2.5 years from the time he lost his card to the time of trial, discounted 5 or 6 months voluntarily, acknowledging that assume there would be some time in there he would have been unemployed, and sought $94,000 in damages. For the jury to conclude that he suffered $75,000 in back pay is fully supported by the record. If the jury, in fact, concluded $75,000 in damages, although Mr. Ketterman is correct, there was a colloquy with counsel in the court that the amounts should not be added together, that was never shared with the jury. There's no instruction informing the jury that they shouldn't add the counts.
Why was this verdict form given? I mean, it's so terrible.
Well, Your Honor, neither side objected to the verdict form before it went in.
And who submitted it?
It came off our computer system, but it was based on discussions between the parties and with the court agreed upon. The same with the jury instructions were neither side objected.
You said at the beginning there was a single injury.
That's correct.
Why would you split it between the two?
Well, there were discrete issues of proof.
Was there a violation of the ADA? Was there a violation of fair duty? And then,
if so,
then what was the injury caused by the violation?
I believe the issue that led to this verdict form is that to find emotional harm under the LMRA, there was an additional proof that had to be found. They had to find outrageousness that was not required.
Yeah, but all you have to do is say, if you say yes right. to this question,
yes.
then you get to the outrageous conduct.
I understand, Your Honor.
Yeah, I mean, it's very simple.
There was discussion about modifying the form to that effect, but again, and the defendant didn't object to this, the decision was made to submit the form that went in. Obviously, in retrospect, to do this again, we would not submit the same form.
Well, or in any other case.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But here we've had a trial. The jury's ruled. The evidence supports $75,000 in back pay. If the jury reached that conclusion, it is equally rational to believe, because they weren't instructed not to add, that they had to put those two different amounts to add to sum up to $75,000. And because the defendant has not demonstrated there's any evidence that a $75,000 back pay constitutes double recovery, hasn't pointed to anything in the instructions or the verdict form that would lead the jury to conclude that they needed to, that the two counts wouldn't be added together, I think the burden is on the defendants at this point.
What's the amount of recovery that you want total?
It would be $75,000 in back pay, $75,000 in liquidated damages, and then the lost future income award of $18,000 would stay, and the emotional pain and suffering award of $6,000.
So what's that?
You want me to do the math here, Your Honor?
$174,000.
Yes.
But that, of course, Judge Kendall said that's not what she said.
She came in $50,000 short of that, yes, Your Honor, because she reduced the back pay award and therefore the liquidated damages amount each by $25,000.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Feeney.
Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time does he have? He ran out?
2 minutes, he
said. Oh, 2 minutes.
Your Honor, just briefly, I would just like to add, the jury, in fact, was told that you are not going to be adding A and B. So the jury was told that they would not be adding the 25 and the 50,000. That's on page 417 of the transcript.
But that wasn't reflected in the verdict form.
It was not reflected in the jury form, but the court and the part and the attorneys had a discussion beforehand that is the best way to handle, unfortunately, what arose was an inconsistent jury verdict. I also would like to point out
that... So you won't use the form again either, right?
No, ma'am.
Okay, good.
I'd also like to point out that the Second Circuit and the Ninth Circuit cases used by the plaintiffs, those had multiple injuries from multiple occurrences, which is different than this. I think that makes it distinguishable.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Ketterman. Mr.